Hey guys, this is Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, the mayor of Brittsburg, and you're listening to Wrestling Cheers Podcast.
Taking your way in the world today takes everything you got. Taking a break from all your worries sure would help a lot. Wouldn't you like to get away? Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name. That troubles are all the same. You wanna go where everybody knows your name. You wanna go where you can see that troubles are all the same. You wanna go where everybody knows your name.
And welcome back to Wrestling Cheers, where everybody knows your name. Especially on the 100th episode. This is Wrestling Cheers, where we like to talk about things going on in the Northeast Ohio independent wrestling scene. We preview shows, and sometimes we even have interviews along the way. This is a special interview episode for the 100th episode of Wrestling Cheers. I am your host. I am Heavy Set, a.k.a. Justin Summers. And we are brought to you by the Trending Topics Network, Midwest Territory, and Key on Sports. Please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to this fine podcast, whether it be Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, YouTube, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or Podbean, WrestlingCheers.podbean.com. You can find us on all your social media, such as Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Facebook.com/WrestlingCheers, Twitter.com/WrestlingCheers, and Instagram.com/WrestlingCheers. Email, if you so choose a desire, WrestlingCheers@gmail.com. We have a merch store over at WhiteManeuver.net. Like I said, this is the 100th episode of Wrestling Cheers. Technically, if I went by the normal pattern, that's why this is coming out on a different day. It would be an AIW show, and I want it to be special. I want it to be fun. And actually, my guests reached out to me, not knowing that I had him in mind for my 100th episode. One of a few names that I had, but none other than the former host of This Is Awesome Wrestling Show and the co-host of Dinner with the King. We have none other than Glenn Moore.
Dude, I am honored to be on 100th episode of Wrestling Cheers. You know, yeah, I asked you to be on because I felt, you know, you had all these other people on the show, not just wrestlers, but, you know, just personalities. And I felt slighted because, you know, you were an intern at TIWS. And I was like, when am I going to be get on the show? And, you know, I like being interviewed, too. So I wanted to reach out and you already had me in mind. So I'm honored to be on the 100th episode because I know in any podcast, I don't care whoever does a podcast, if you make it to 100 episodes, you're doing a good job.
Thank you. Crazy thing too is like even before, like this was the Ohio Indie Report, so I have more than that under my belt, but going heavy, no pun intended, going steady at this since, I mean, beginning of or mid 2016, I want to say, trying to figure out who was going to be the 100th episode guest or what I was going to do for it. It was honestly between you and John Thorne.
Oh my God. Well, sorry, John Thorne for not me. Can he be number 101? I mean, number 101 is pretty cool, but I, like I said, I'm honored. I was thinking you would say Steve Guy, but I'm glad you didn't say Steve Guy.
Steve John Thorne. Guy has already been on.
Oh my God. Are you serious?
Steve Guy was on last year. Yeah. Early last year.
I gotta go. Not only
was he on the show, he was live in studio at my home setup.
Wow. Okay. Well, I see where I stand. It's fine. We can continue.
Well, I don't know if you were around here at that time because you now are you back and forth between Memphis or are you permanently in Memphis or what's that going?
I'm in Memphis right now. I would say I'm like 80-20 between Memphis and Cleveland. You know, I came down here. I was planning to come down here in the end of July because obviously I'm sure we'll get into it. I co-host a podcast with Jerry Lawler, and he's in Memphis. And Brian Christopher passed away. You know, Jerry called me at 1 o'clock in the morning, and I didn't answer it because I was sleeping. And then he texted me and said, you know, Brian, what was going on with Brian, his son? And he eventually passed away. So I came down immediately and, you know, obviously for the funeral and just being there for Jerry. And it just turned into me staying longer just to help out, you know, what was going on and kind of be there for Jerry because, you know, Jerry's a very popular guy. But yeah. One thing about Jerry, he doesn't he has a lot of friends, but not close friends to where he feels comfortable enough to, you know, have you hanging around when, you know, things are going rough. So, you know, just being able to hang out with him and just kind of help him get back in the routine of what he was doing. And then we were on the podcast was, you know, was taking off. You know, we've been doing it for about a year and a half at the time. And, you know, we never really done any podcasts in person. I think we did one before that, and that was at his barbecue restaurant with a bunch of fans that came out to the barbecue restaurant. But it just, you know, I just decided to stay, and, you know, Halloween came, and he makes a big deal about Halloween, so that was fun. You know, I came back to Cleveland for the holidays, but I enjoy Memphis, and I made it like a personal thing to me is I don't like the Cleveland weather anymore, so I'm like, well, I might as well go to Memphis. I get some cold. I like the cold. Don't like the snow. So here in Memphis, it's you know, it's a little chilly, but there's no snow. So it's the best of both worlds. I get the cold, no snow. I'm in Memphis, and I do get to hang out with the king when I want. Even I stay at his house most of the time, 80% of the time, 20% of the time is a nearby hotel. So I'm laying in bed in Jerry Lawler's house, and I'm like, oh my god, I'm sleeping. I'm welcome in the house of Jerry Lawler. It's pretty cool thing.
Memphis is one of those places I really want to go to just like on my own. Cause I technically with, you know, my job and when I used to be over the road, I mean, I've been in and out of Memphis, West Memphis all the time, but just that experience of being in Memphis and like chilling, even like recently when I went down to Nashville, that was like my first time actually really experiencing Nashville without just like driving through it or something.
Yeah. It's a, you know, I haven't been to Nashville. I've just, you know, driven through Nashville. So I haven't experienced the nightlife or, you know, the night scene of Nashville that everybody talks about. Memphis is a little bit different than Nashville. I mean, Memphis is kind of like, it's kind of like Cleveland. You know, they have a little downtown area, Beale Street, you know, with the bars and stuff. But you know, you know, it's just like Cleveland. Everybody tells you don't go downtown at night. It's really bad. I mean, it kind of is. It is bad to go downtown in Memphis. But, they, you know, the suburbs are nice. In Memphis, you know, you have your bad areas, but I mean, it's nothing special, but I mean, you got to go to Graceland.
That's on my list.
You got to go there. You got to go to Beale Street, obviously. You got to, at least, you know, if you being a huge wrestling fan, go to the Mid-South Coliseum, at least, you know, go to it. Mm-hmm. You know, so there are some places you have to go to when you do are in Memphis, but, I more enjoy the weather. Like I said,
what about the Big Bass Pro Shop?
I've been there. You got to go to the pyramid. I did go in there, but I was always told you have to take the elevator up to the tippy top of the pyramid. I didn't do that yet. I guess I should, but yeah, you got to go to the pyramid too. You got to experience the, you know, Bass Pro Shop.
In the 2 years I was over the road, that's when they switched it over. So like one day I'm just driving past it and I just see this big Bass Pro Shop logo. And I'm like, what? What just happened here?
And dude, like you walk in and there's like a river with fish in it, and you have like little like wood bridges. It's like walking walking outside. It's just like, and they have the shops on the outer edge of like the courtyard, which has like the, you know, like the little boardwalk area. It's really it's crazy. It's real cool, but it's quite the experience.
Yeah, that's definitely a weird thing that's on my list, just because I was driving through the area roughly when that would made the big transition. Because even like driving past it before, I'm like, oh, that looks really cool. And then they did the changeover, and I'm like, all right, I gotta Google, like, is that a Bass Pro Shop? What's going on? Oh no, yeah, it's full on Bass Pro Shop in the pyramid now. And I'm like, that's interesting.
You gotta go, dude. You gotta make a trip to Memphis, definitely.
It's Tennessee as a whole, like I've mentioned to people before, is just, I want to go there and experience it on my own. Like, I got to recently go down to Southern Underground Pro and experience Nashville just a little bit, but there's still, like, I want to go back to Nashville. I didn't get a chance to go to the Johnny Cash Museum, a huge Johnny Cash fan. Thing that I got to do on the way out, which I was happy. I did it alone. I did it on a Monday morning before I was heading home, as I visited Johnny Cash's grave, which is something to behold, because a guy of that magnitude has no fanfare whatsoever at his grave, except for like I should say the cemetery doesn't have that. The actual grave, obviously, it says Johnny Cash. It's a like kind of big thing, but there's no like big monument. There's no signs that say Johnny and June Cash are buried here. Here's where it's at. No, like I had to Google it to find where they were buried. It was crazy. Jeez,
that's nuts. Yeah, I've visited my fair share of celebrity graves, especially in Hollywood, and it's quite. Some are witty, you know. Some are off the path, and some are just, you know, full of fanfare, like you said, stuff like Marilyn Monroe's, which is just, you know, covered in lipstick of people kissing her grave, like not her grave, but her, she's like in a mausoleum.
Yeah.
You know, so, but it's crazy, man.
Going there on a Monday too, Monday morning, like there was, no pun intended, it was dead there. Like,
no.
there was like no cars, nobody else like hanging around. So like it got to be a cool moment. Like I really talked about this much. Like there's a handful of Johnny Cash songs I really like, and most of them I sang the first verse or the first little bit. Like A Boy Named Sue is just one long song. Like I sang the first little bit of it, and it's just like some of my favorite songs, and I had to do it. I sang the beginning of Ain't No Grave.
Mm-hmm. Did the Undertaker come walking out of the graveyard?
Well, it's ironic because the opening line is "Ain't no grave can hold my body down." I'm at Johnny Cash's grave, singing, and I'm like, "Ain't no grave." Like, is it ironic? Is it funny? Like, what's going on here? But no, that's the first one that came to mind. But
it's like weird when you talk about things like that, and maybe some people think it's morbid or kind of, you know, crazy or strange. But I mean, I know you're not able to meet your, you know, celebrity, the person that you enjoy entertainment wise in person, but you get to go to the grave and have that one-on-one, you know, not people waiting or off to the side, or there's a bunch of fanfare around it. I mean, that's, you know, it's if it's your own personal moment, more power to you. I mean, people probably think it's morbid, but who cares?
I think because of what it was, it seems morbid. Like I went to a random cemetery. Well, not random, but what seems like to be a random cemetery, found the grave of one of my favorite musicians of all time, and I just stood there for a couple minutes, and it was a little cold. But how many times do people go to, like, Kennedy's grave, or, you know, go to Graceland for Elvis? There's all these, like, really big tombs or grave sites where there is that fanfare. Oh, so-and-so is buried over here. Come see so-and-so.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's the weird thing. Like, this wasn't necessarily meant for tourism, but obviously you can go. There was no gate or right. anything, so people are welcome to do it. So I think that's the weird thing that divides it.
The only weird thing that this is – I bring Jerry back into it. So being in Memphis, you know, Jerry doesn't do anything all day. When I get done doing my work at home job, you know, we should hang out. So one place we went after lunch was – the actual burial site that Jerry is going to be laid to rest when he does pass away. And it's obviously in Memphis next to Isaac Hayes in the cemetery. And just we were driving in the car, him and I, and he asked me, let's go see it. And I'm like, oh, okay. So here we are. We pull up to like the spot where Jerry is going to be laid to rest. You know, there's Isaac Hayes with a huge – it's like a 10-foot by 3 or 4 feet, you know, huge bronze cover of the grave, and it has like images of Isaac Hayes on it, and you know, one big, you know, describing who he was and what he did. And I guess Jerry has the same thing going to be made when he passes away. He's going to have a huge bronze cover and, you know, images of Lawler throughout his career and a little bio, whatever. And right now it's just a patch of grass, and I'm standing there, and you know, obviously Jerry is a good friend of mine, but like, you know, Jerry Lawler, Jerry the King Lawler, like, I mean, any Attitude Era fanboy is marking out just hanging out with him. But like, here I am. This is where Jerry's going to be laid to rest when he passes away. And we're standing right on the grave of where he's going to be laid to rest. That was a little weird, even for me. And I don't get weirded out that much. But to stand at the future gravesite of one of the wrestling's legends with him while we're just standing there was extremely weird. And like, it doesn't faze him at all. Like, it didn't weird him out or anything. He's like, oh, this will be a patch of grass. But that was weird for me.
It's almost like, I don't know whether it's better or worse than when you have, like, a married couple and one of them passes away. So they, you know, obviously the gravestone's made, and then you have your name, if you're the one that's still alive, like, you have their name, and they're born, and, like, you're basically looking at waiting for the death date. Like, yeah, you are not only at where you're eventually going to be buried, but your headstone is already half done.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even know where I'm going to be at or when. I mean, I don't even – it's not even gotten in my mind. I mean, I'm 35 years old, and I haven't really even – I mean, I haven't even thought about it one time. So that's – I don't know. That's – I mean, that's good to go there and to visit your loved one that has passed away, and you see your name, and you see the year that you were born, and then you see the dash, and then the big empty spot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, geez, I'm getting a little bit chilly, a little chills up, up and down my spine.
Yeah, we can move on to another topic, man. But,
yeah.
So it's kind of cool because I've got to name drop you to, like, different people.
Oh boy. I don't know if this is cool or a mistake or what the reaction was from these people.
Well, the two that off the top of my head were The Miz. Okay. And Jerry Lawler. And I tried to joke with Jerry Lawler. I'm like, yeah, we have something unfortunately in common or something like that. I'm like, we're both friends with Glenn Moore. And I was just like putting it as a kind of a joke, like, like we're both friends with Glenn.
Yeah.
And he's just like, oh, nice. Glenn's a good guy. And I'm like, I know, man. I'm just fucking with you. Like, but then when I dropped it, the name to Miz, he was kind of like, oh, cool. Because the thing is with Miz, when I met him, I was wearing a hashtag heel hoodie. Mm-hmm. And he noticed it, and he's like, Dolph Ziggler. And I'm like, yeah, I like the hoodie. It's at that point, it was old. It was like 4 years old. It was thin as shit. And it was just, a cold day. That's why I wore it, amongst other hoodies. But, yeah. So I had fun, like, dropping your name to them. I think, Stipe. But you told me, you're like, drop my name to Stipe.
Yeah, Stipe, I've known him for, it's going to be almost 20 years. And then Miz, you know, I met Miz around the same time as Jerry, become friends with him. So, I mean, I guess it's cool. You can name drop. I mean, as long as they didn't say anything bad about me, I guess that's pretty cool.
Nobody said anything bad yet.
Not yet.
Yeah. No.
There'll be one.
There's probably people out there, but that's not people we have to get into. But I first met you. It was the This Is Awesome wrestling show.
Mm, what's that?
It's should be in a cemetery somewhere.
Oh.
Yeah,
sad.
I miss that show. Like, in the thing that's, like, not talked about enough for those who did listen, like, just as it was about to, like, turn a corner, like, it disappeared.
Yeah.
Like, wasn't the turn corner episode 100?
I mean, there was a couple. I mean, we started off hot early. I mean, you know, first guest, Jerry Lawler. It obviously was my connection to get Jerry on the show. So he said a couple things that were newsworthy and got us a ton of downloads. And then, like, episode 6 was Seth Rollins. And, you know, so we're getting Seth Rollins. You know, it blew up after that. And then, you know, we got a sponsor, Weber Grill, who paid for our WrestleMania trip to go to WrestleMania. They paid for the hotel. They gave us spending money, paid for airfare for us to go from Cleveland. Myself and Steve Guy, to go to Cleveland, to San Francisco, or San Jose, to interview people at WrestleMania Access, and everything was paid for, which was amazing. So, and then, like, you know, before that, we had NXT media passes, so we were only people interviewing anybody backstage at NXT. Got Sasha Banks, Kevin Owens, Corey Graves, you know, hanging out with Neville. So, I mean, we started that. That was, you know, episode 1 was October 2014. So by April 2015, I mean, we were sitting in a hotel room, everything paid for, WrestleMania, getting interviews and going back, you know, at Access with WWE's media credentials and doing that. I mean, we started off hot, maybe a little bit too hot, because after that, it kind of plateaued, and then we went more towards the indie scene with John Thorne and AIW going backstage and interviewing people, and then trying to get interviews over the phone. A lot of hard work went to this. I mean, obviously, you know, do what it takes to, you know, get a podcast going and get more ears to listening to it. And then, so, you know, the hard work that goes into it, and just, you know, by the time end of 2016 came around for episode 100, you would think that it would be a celebratory event for a podcast, but it was more kind of like the the final poke into it to kill it. And then the studio went away, the CLE sound, you know, there was no static studio for the show. And at the time I was co-hosting The Card Is Going to Do on a Change with AIW, with Thorne, and at the time you know, Biggins, and you know, there was no static studio because they were recording where This Is Awesome Wrestling Show was recording. And it became a rift between Thorne, because he needed a place to record and I couldn't provide it anymore. So they cut me out from co-hosting just like that. And, you know, did their thing with Steve or recorded. They got some stuff from Cole Cabana, recording equipment, advice from him. And they, you know, recording in a house somewhere, I guess, or something like that, or Denny's or whatever they record the podcast. And then I was out. And then I tried to try to get This Is Awesome back with Gregory Iron to be a co-host, and then Aaron Seacrest to be a co-host. And we did one show together, and I thought it went great. Like, we even did like a test run. And I was able to kind of reincarnate This Is Awesome Wrestling Show with myself, Gregory Iron, and Aaron Seacrest. Dude, that show, we probably could have done some things, but we didn't have a static studio. And when there's no studio and no static place to do it, I think it takes away from, you know, that professionalism, kind of when you go into a studio to record instead of recording at someone's house, or you're doing it in a random spot. When you know you can go there, sit down, do your thing, and have a good show, I think it improves it, you know, overall. But without a static studio, it just became hard, and it just kind of faded away. And geez, I think I did 3 or 4 episodes every 6 months, and it just got to the point where I need to kill this. I just need to put it down officially. And that's what happened, I think, late last year.
Yeah, not only was I sad to see it go, but like, even when those random episodes would pop up, or, you know, we get this like, all right, it's going to get revived. Like, I kind of like, I held on hope, because in itself, it was like something different. I mean, I was happy that you guys did start to get away from more of the WWE reviews, because those type of podcasts, and like, I used to do one, like, those have just saturated the market. And it's to the point where I look at them like, if you're not somebody that's making money off it, off your first episode, like, don't even try, unless you want to do it to get your feet wet. Like, okay, I want to dabble in podcasts. Let me start off with talking WWE, talking Raw and SmackDown. And then eventually you need to get away from it, because you're not going to get any traction. Nobody's going to fucking listen to you, because why should they listen to some random nobody when everybody's doing those shows who are also random nobodies, and you have people who are actually somebody making money off of it, and they're the ones that people are going to want to listen to, because those are credible sources. Like, you're just nobody.
Yeah. I mean, and like, you know, we started off so hot with doing WWE reviews and concentrating more on WWE, because we got the sponsorship. We were able to get interviews with, you know, WWE talent, NXT talent.
Yeah.
And so we kept with that because we thought that was the, you know, the right ingredient for the show. But I'm glad that we were able to kind of switch for most of the time to go to like interviewing, you know, AIW talent and up and coming, because we interviewed a ton of people that are now on Raw and SmackDown.
And
we're just, you know, going through the indie scene, and now on Raw and SmackDown, and I still have, you know, all the This Is Awesome Wrestling Show episodes up there, and we still get a ton of downloads for those people who are Googling the people that are in, you know, SmackDown or NXT or Raw, because they don't know who they are.
Yeah.
You know, we still get a lot of plays for those episodes, which is great, because I think when they were in AIW and not really well known, they're more open about their life. They're more open about what's going on with their career or what happened.
Yeah.
And I think if you really want to know a wrestler, that's when you want to, you know, talk to them or listen to an interview, because you'll hear things that they won't delve into when they are a known star now.
Especially when they tell you to rock that beautiful body.
Rhonda. Well, she's old now. Everybody knows who she is. But that's experience I'll never, ever forget.
That was probably one of my favorite nights ever. Yeah, like, dude. I've explained it to people, but like you're the one that was there with me. It was, you were telling me like, come downstairs now.
Yeah.
Crazy thing is, like, I was more content on trying to meet Noel and Frank the Clown that I did later on at WrestleCon.
Yeah.
But because I was like, I'm not gonna meet Ronda. Like, there's no way. And you're just like, dude, come downstairs, talk to Thorne. Like, all you have to do is ask him, and it'll be fine.
Yeah.
So then and he's like, yeah, go ahead, man. So, like, we're sitting there, we're talking to Ron, and this was after, I think, the whole Rock That Beautiful Body thing. Like, I wasn't downstairs for that point, but, like, we're there talking with her about random stuff. Like, I don't even remember. She did compliment my shirt, which was a This Is Awesome Wrestling Show shirt. I think you got a pop out of that. And then, like, Shayna comes down along with Jessamine, and then, like, I'm standing there talking to three of the four horsewomen. I mentioned my friend, Jessica I, and they all say, oh, yeah, like, we're really rooting for her and her fight tomorrow, because that was right before the Cleveland UFC show. And then we started talking about Natalya, who's one of my favorite female wrestlers ever. And all of it, like, boom, we're having a conversation about Natalya. This is all, like, in my head, I'm like, oh, my God, this is awesome. No pun intended. Then you come downstairs, you're like, dude, Tyson Kidd's upstairs. Like, I'm like, what? Like, we're talking about, you're telling me he's upstairs? You're like, yeah, go upstairs. And like, there he is, like, talking with, I don't know if it was like Cold or somebody. And I managed to get a pic with him. But I know me, Thorne, and like a bunch of other people, like, we became the coolest among our non-wrestling friends because of that picture. Like, anybody who got that picture with Ronda, all of a sudden became extra cool to non-wrestling fans. That was just a fun fucking night.
Dude, that night almost didn't happen, too. It almost was ruined in the parking lot when Ronda came to Mount Carmel hours before the show even happened to drop off Shayna. I mean, can we say who did it? Justin Doan, I think, is the guy. He ran up to the car where Ronda, because she pulled in the back to drop off Shayna for the show, and Ronda was going to come back. Well, Thorne didn't know if she was going to come back. I think Ronda told Shayna that she was going to feel it out, see how, you know, what it was, the vibe was like, and it wasn't a sure thing that Ronda was going to be backstage at AIW until like last second.
Yeah.
So you know, Ronda comes up. I think they're in this huge SUV. You know, they pull up. I think, you know, Shayna came out, and somehow, you know, fans saw Ronda that were already out in the parking lot at Mark Carmel. What, Justin ran up to the car, like sprinted to the car to try to get a picture or autograph for Ronda, and Ronda zoomed out there. So after that happened, the vibe in the building, because I was, you know, in the building, was that, oh my God, Ronda is not going to come back. Why would Ronda come back when this, you know, literally happened when she pulled into the place, let alone a full gym, full parking lot full of, you know, people? Like, she's not going to come back. Like, it's not going to happen. And Shayna kept saying, I don't know, you know, we'll see, blah, blah, blah. And then, like, all of a sudden, someone told me, I was doing commentary for certain matches, and before I was doing commentary for one match, someone said, oh, Ronda's coming, we need you. And, oh, my God, I forget his name, and I really should not forget. You know, the big dude, security guy for AIW.
Joe Norris.
Joe Norris, I'm sorry, Joe. Don't hurt me. Joe would come up to me and says, "We need you and I to go out there and you know, kind of be like the barrier, so you know, anybody sees Ronda, they're not running up to her, and she doesn't feel like, you know, bombarded by people if she does get seen." But so I guess she came through the front. People don't realize like they're not in Mount Carmel anymore, but the gorilla position in Mount Carmel, right behind the AIW setup, there's a set of stairs that go straight down the locker room. There's not really a gorilla position, so to speak. It's just a stairwell, and there's a door that leads out to the front of Mount Carmel. So I think she pulled up, got in the building easily, no one saw her, and then somebody parked the car for her. But dude, that was a great night. And she was so open, she took every single photo with a smile on her face.
Yeah,
you know, she was
even with drinking. Justin Doan.
Yep. And yep, even she was drinking, you know, she was having some beers, and I took a photo with her, and I tweeted out, you know, hey, with Ronda Rousey. And I was standing next to her, and she goes, are you tweeting that out? I'm like, yeah. She goes, no. No one's supposed to know. It was already out there, and I had, you know, a ton of likes already. I'm like, oh, I got to delete it. So I deleted it. but Rhonda wasn't happy. So I thought my evening was ruined with Rhonda because she was not too pleased that I tweeted out the photo already, because I guess you weren't supposed to. But I didn't get that memo. I didn't know. But I didn't know the plan for that evening, so I didn't know it would be a surprise or whatnot. But she was telling some stories about crazy stalker dudes.
Yeah, I remember
coming to her house, especially like on Christmas or something, like straight up knocking on the door. So I guess she also didn't want to let people know where she was at, to where, you know, she was going to be for a few hours for people to come and try to track her down.
Especially with like UFC being in Cleveland, you probably have some crazy Ronda fans there. They would be like, oh, she's in this place called Lakewood. Let me go down to, what's this, Our Lady of Mount Carmel and go check her out. But
that was a great night, dude. The crowd was hot. You know, you had a lot of, you know, people there. Like you mentioned Tyson Kidd, a lot of, you know, notable faces were there for Horsewomen. I mean, that was just a great, great night for wrestling fans that were there, because they got to see Ronda, Shayna won, and they closed the show. And it got a lot of pub for AIW.
I remember when we were coming into that show, like you had kind of gave me a heads up. You're like, yeah, Rhonda's like coming, but there's like they're not posting about it. She's not posting about it. Like, it's kind of like this, she's coming with Jessamine and Shayna. So like, don't say anything. And then like definitely all that shit happened. But I can't remember if it was the day before or that day. You're like, at the end of the match, just start filming. And I was like, okay.
No, I don't think it was day before. Nothing was set. Nothing was.
You told me at some point, I don't remember when, you're just like, when the match is over, just keep filming.
Maybe John told me something like that, that if she wasn't going to come, that's what they're going to do. And they're going to wait to see if she was cool with it when she got there, to feel the vibe out, because they technically weren't allowed. You know, she's on a contract with UFC. She can't say she's somewhere or, you know, promote or I guess without UFC approving. So if she came out like that as a fan, as a regular person, you know, it's no big deal. But I know I tipped you off before, because I know he wanted to catch it, because when she did come out, it was for, you know, 3 or 4 seconds, and then she was gone. So it was, dude, that was a fun, and I was right behind there. Like she was sitting there with a couple people, like sitting there right behind the curtain, and she was peeking through the curtain to watch, you know, Shayna's match. Mm-hmm. And I was just standing right with her. We're watching the match, all three of us, and I'm like, wow, this is freaking amazing. And then she goes out there, and then she's asking how I do. Was it okay? To Aaron Bauer, because Aaron was kind of in charge of telling her, you know, what to do, and when to go out and stuff. So, dude, that was a fun night. Especially in that small gym that was packed with people, mm-hmm. and people popped loud, and it was just that was a good night, man.
Like you said, like who's who in the crowd. I think it's crazy too. Just recently at WWE Elimination Chamber, we had Ronda versus Ruby Riott, formerly known as Heidi Lovelace, who Shayna beat that night. That's something that like ran through my mind during that match. Like, wow, who? I can't say who would have thought, whether I knew at that point or not, I knew Heidi was destined for something, because she was on the upswing for a year or two before that, probably even longer than that. And she got, like, that was part of life when she lost that title. That was like one of her second to last AIW matches. I think she had one more rematch for the title, and that was it.
I mean, I saw Ronda a few weeks ago at backstage Memphis of Raw. I was with Jerry, and I asked her, I'm like, you know, you probably don't remember me. And I'm like, I'm from Cleveland, and, you know, we hung out a lot backstage at AIW. And she looked at me and she remembered. And I'm like, you chopped me across the chest. And she goes, oh, yeah. And she goes, she looked at me like dead serious. Like the smile went from like a Ronda smile to like when she gets serious, like in her promos. Mm-hmm. Like it was like, she goes, I think about that night all the time. And I'm like, that's awesome. So it just awesome to see where she, you know, where she is now. And, nice to know that she doesn't forget that night, kind of maybe that night, you know, even, you know, the fire grew inside of her to be a professional wrestler. And, you know, AIW helped, and the fans that night helped, because she knew that she could probably excel and live out our dream of being a professional wrestler.
I knew, like, before that moment and before Shayna became an AIW regular for a short amount of time that actually was, I was kind of a Ronda critic. And then after meeting her, it really, like, changed my opinion on her. I'm like, she's a lot more down the earth than probably what someone of her stature would be. Because just literally being the face of the UFC for quite a while, like, she didn't have to be as nice as she was. And I don't know if, you know, if she's different elsewhere, but I don't know. She was cool as shit that night, put on a, like, big smile when we took the picture, and, like, I had a cool conversation with her about Jess. So I'm like, eh, anything I ever thought negative about you has just completely changed. And, like, when she came to WWE, I was full for it. And a lot of people are like, whoa, she hasn't earned. And I'm like, ah, you're, stop it. Just stop it. But then again, I've heard fans also bitch about, like, Shayna. Yeah. Like Shayna's not good. Or Shayna, she just it got to where she's at because of her friend. And I'm like, did you watch her in the Independence? Like, I didn't watch her everywhere, but she did shit that she didn't have to. If she was that kind of person, she would have got, you know, just signed to NXT. But no, she went out and proved herself.
Yeah. And it's not, you know, the internet is a toxic place. It's just awful. And they jump on something before learning about the facts, and especially this Corey Graves stuff that's going on. You know, they jump on it, and then when they say nasty stuff, there's no apology. You know, they get off the hook when they're proved wrong. You know, it's just I hate it. And it's easy to criticize somebody, but then when you meet them, you know, obviously they're going to fan out and be a fan of the person that they're been criticizing. But, like, it's just people forget that when they bash people on social media and they bash a wrestler or entertainer or whoever it is, that person's a real person. You know, they have a life just like you and I. And I'm sure your opinion would change of that person if you ever met them. And it's great to hear that. You know, I know you never would bash Ronda Rousey. I mean, you're a critic. I feel like you would be a respected. I know who you are. So I know you're not, like, a troll. So it's good to hear that when you meet somebody that is a celebrity and you have a certain opinion about them, and you meet them and you realize that they're a down to earth person, a good person, that your opinion changes about them. Because I wish people would think of that before they would send a hate tweet out or they go personal at somebody not knowing all the facts. Is that, hey, just because they're in the limelight and they're a celebrity doesn't mean they have problems at home or tribulations or they're going through a rough time personally. And for you to bring light to something or make fun of them or people surrounding them, it's just wrong. It's just terribly wrong. And I think the internet needs to stop doing that. Just put it simply. It's just it's a toxic place because I see, like, you know, tweets, you know, when Jerry and I went to a Donald Trump rally, okay, and Jerry got death threats, and you should have seen the tweets that people were sending Jerry. We're sitting there, and he's, you know, showing me his phone of what people were saying just because he went to a rally that they oppose. I get it. You have the opinion to oppose, but to send death threats and make jokes and go ask someone personally just because you don't like their choice of, you know, political affiliation, it's like, who are you? Like, what was wrong in your life that you have to say those kind of things on a public forum? It's just mind-boggling.
And I think in the past decade, a lot of people have taken politics to the extreme. I mean, this was going on in, like, in the Obama administration too, to where, you know, if you, you know, display that maybe you were a liberal, you're a Democrat, you went, you know, or however that be, like, you, like, there were people on the other side that attacked you, and now it's, like, the same thing. And I don't understand that mindset from either side. I try to be fair and, like, try not to over judge shit, like, especially when it comes to, like, political. I'm like, I think I've had people ask me because they know that I'm friends with you and, like, obviously with you connected to Jerry, and they're like, well, what do you think about that? I'm like, do I agree with them? No, but what does that matter? Like, that's not the point. Like, I don't agree with people. Like, I'm not friends with people because of, like, political beliefs. That's
exactly,
like, that's definitely my own personal thing. And I bet that I know there's people that they're like, well, if you know, you voted for Trump, like, I don't like you. And I'm like, well, I voted for Obama, and I know there's people that don't like that. I mean, if you don't like that, that's fine.
Yeah.
I'm going to live the next however many years Trump is president, the same way I did as Obama was president, and pretty much the same way I did as Bush was president. But I try not to get into too much politics shit here, but...
Well, if you want to mix like wrestling with the politics, it's like when AJ Styles went on that conservative podcast or conservative show, and you, instantly people say, oh, I'm not a fan of AJ Styles anymore. I was a fan of his. No, I'm not. It's like, what does his in-ring ability have to do with anything politics-wise? He has the freedom, and newsflash for people who are fans of WWE wrestlers, I would say 80% of them are conservatives, hardcore conservatives, because they don't like their money being taken away from them, so they're obviously conservative. So, I mean, it's – so you're most likely your favorite wrestler is a conservative, just putting it out there. But it's just – it's crazy how people would, you know, do a 180 and just because of their political affiliation. It's just – it's and the hateful things they say. It's not even saying, okay, I don't agree with you on your politics. Like, I'm not going to be not be friends with you, Justin, because you don't agree with who I vote for. Like,
yeah.
And even Barack Obama follows me on Twitter. I never followed him in my life. I follow Trump and I follow, you know, some conservative people. But, you know, he follows me on Twitter. I'm sure he didn't do it personally. You know, Glenn Moore, I'm going to follow him. But
like Ronda Rousey followed you.
Like Ronda. Well, I saw Ronda do it. She did it in person.
I was there too, actually. Yeah.
I think I was. It's just crazy. It's just, like I said, the internet is a toxic place. It's just it's sad. It's sad that just because people can't be held accountable for what they say on the internet, mm-hmm. 99% of the time, they think they can get away with it. They really shouldn't be able to get away with it, but they do. You can make egg accounts. You can say whatever you want, but it's just sad. Sad people. Sad trolls, Justin. Sad trolls.
I know I experienced this a little bit, like also when we became friends, and it was right around the time that everything happened with Jerry and his, they're not married yet, right?
Fiance. Officially fiance.
Yeah. But when all that shit happened, like I was in kind of like a private, like kind of like chat room with some friends, and there were some that are just like so anti Jerry. Like I know there's stories about him and all this stuff, but literally I went back to something I recorded around that time to remember what was said, but there was like this one dude who was just like, well, he got out of jail because he's a celebrity, and trying to say like basically saying he was guilty. Mm-hmm. And like, there's stories that I'm not going to necessarily get into because it's none of my business, but you kind of told me a story about Jerry and how he was with Brian during a certain incident. And I'm just like, if he was like this towards his son, why do you think he would do that to his fiance? Like, no. And if he got out of jail because him being a celebrity, then how did he get in jail? Because exactly. You wouldn't go into jail because like, you're just like, you want to go, okay, I don't like Lawler. Okay, fine, whatever. Like I kind of had that mindset too for a while, but he did do a lot of great. There was like probably a period where maybe Lawler just wasn't as fresh anymore, but I don't know if that time passed. There was also a time that Cole was like really bad.
Yeah.
But I don't hold that against him.
I mean, and the thing is, people still hold that incident against Jerry all the time. They bring up that he beats somebody. Why are WWE employing people who beat people? It's like, first of all, he didn't beat anybody in that incident. They just didn't find anybody at fault, so they took both of them to jail, which usually happens when they don't know who is the one that is at fault. They take both of them to jail. There's no evidence against each other one. There's arguing back and forth. They say, well, if one of you are not going to take responsibility, both of you are going downtown. So that's what happened, and obviously it was thrown out a couple days later.
Yeah.
And people still say that he beat a woman. It's not even the case. People are just stupid and dumb, and I mean, it's just people roll with things and they want their own agenda being pushed, and it's just wrong. It's like I said, it's just a toxic place. But yeah, it's sad. It's really sad.
Speaking of toxic places, thing that I want to get into before we end the show, we get into the Fave Five questions. I want to talk about the Browns.
The Browns.
How's
that toxic? How's that toxic?
Because of the history we've had.
Well, the history, but I mean, it's looking bright.
That's why it's. As we're recording this, it's February. This will come out early March. Like, I've never wanted to talk Browns football at the beginning of the offseason. Maybe when you get, like, after the draft and, you know, all that. Like, maybe around May, June, like, let's talk football. But I don't know, like, this is just, this is amazing. I love, like, what's going on in the culture for the first time in a very long time feels like it's changing.
It's great to be here. We are on the off season and we're not talking about who the Browns are going to pick with their first top pick in the draft. Like, it's
right.
It's amazing. Like, it can go, I mean, they're sitting, what, 17th? I think they can go either way. I mean, it can go a bunch of ways, but we're not sitting here talking about the Browns Super Bowl, which is the NFL draft for years and years. So that's great. And we're talking about, you know, you're talking about signing guys, or, you know, you trade him, trying to get trading for, you know, for Beckham or for Antonio Brown. I mean, it's a great time to be a Browns fan, but it can only go up from here with Baker and trying to get some more pieces surrounding him. You know, Kareem Hunt, which people are going to, you know, complain about. I get it. I it was a head scratcher for me too. But you just look on paper, football. We're not talking about personal off the field. Yeah. You look at the paper, the paper roster of the Browns, and you add Kareem Hunt to that. Matter if he's going to play six games or four games, whatever he's, you know, going through. Dude, you have him and Nick Chubb in the backfield, mm-hmm. with Duke Johnson too. If you know, he's still there. You have Landry, Callaway was starting to come through. Higgins was starting to come through towards the end of the year. With Baker Mayfield, maybe you draft some offensive line pieces. That defense, you add some more pieces to them. Hopefully guys stay healthy. I mean, there's no reason why they can't compete for the North.
I think we're definitely competing for the North. It's my big question is, like, how the rest of the division will pan out, because I feel like as a division, we're kind of all a wild card, because we're on our way up for the first time in a very long time. The Steelers are like, they miss the playoffs and they're just in a bunch of turmoil. Are they going to be able to bounce back? How many years does Roethlisberger have? Ravens look like they were nosediving mid-season, and then Lamar Jackson takes over and he's killing it. So it's like, okay, they might be on the bounce back. They could have a step forward, but they can also have a step back. And then the Bengals finally getting rid of Marvin Lewis, they probably going to be a couple years, but, you know, still a wild card of what we're all going to do. And God, I say this with everybody that I talk with about Browns football. I just want 1 year that we finish over the Steelers.
Yeah.
If we can get a year where they're in fourth place, oh, that's the dream. That's the real dream.
Or even, you know, coming down to, you know, a week 17 face off against the, you know, the Steelers, Brown Steelers, and the winner goes to the playoffs. Like, yeah. That would be, you know, epic in itself. You know, and I hate putting win predictions, you know, especially this early. You don't know who they're drafting. You don't know who they're going to sign. But I mean, just the way that Baker Mayfield has, you know, transformed this team into a possible contender just in 1 year. And like I said, we don't know how teams are going to adjust to Baker Mayfield. You know, now they have film on him. You know, will they be able to adjust? You know, there are some halves that he did not play well, and there were some games that he played extremely well.
Yeah.
So he's still, you know, will that sophomore slump, you know, come about for him? But man, if he can, you know, just keep improving little by little, mm-hmm. and you get some, you know, some stronger pieces around him, Kareem Hunt helps. Dude, it's just, it's promising. It's a lot promising than we were 1 year ago today, Justin.
It's a lot more promising than when we drafted the guy that I thought was going to be the best, Johnny Manziel.
I was never a fan of Johnny Manziel.
Here's the thing. I will always defend why I liked him, because why I liked him, past tense, is why I like Baker Mayfield. Like, but the difference between them is something that I didn't see. I've explained this on the podcast before, that you have Johnny Manziel was cocky. Mm-hmm. Baker Mayfield is confident. They are very similar, like, on the surface. But when pressure comes in, cocky can fold. Most likely with Manziel, he did fold. Confident will go out there, throw an interception, and come right back out and do the exact same play, throw the exact same pass without hesitation. That is why I love Baker Mayfield. I wanted a guy with a chip on his shoulder and something to prove. I felt like that was Manziel. Like, I wanted someone kind of like a Jim McMahon for the Bears, someone who was just little bit different. I didn't want the poster boy, Drew Brees, Peyton Manning, like, which granted, I wanted those stats wise. I didn't want that kind of attitude for a quarterback. Like, I love the picture from the Redskins preseason game where Johnny Manziel was flicking off the Redskins sideline. Love that.
Yeah.
We get that with Baker. And I kind of, like I said, I look back and I'm like, I would never want to draft Manziel again, but hey, I know why I liked him, and definitely it's basically to Johnny Manziel is the dollar store version of Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, it's true. And the one thing about for me, when I compare the two, is that Baker Mayfield has been told no before. Johnny Manziel has always been told yes. Oh, you can do that. He is like the kid that has the rich parents that, you know, is going to succeed his abilities, but he doesn't have to do anything extra because, you know, his parents are going to be there and he's always going to be number one. So he doesn't have to do go in the film room and do the extra work that like a guy like Baker Mayfield is going to do because he's been told no, you know, no, I can be able to start here, you know, go somewhere else. No, you know, you're not going to be a good player in the NFL. You know, Manziel was always told, all the yes men around him, you know, Baker, he uses that no to on the field and being confident in his ability because he knows he can do it. Manziel, you know, he would go to practice and not know the plays. Mm-hmm. He never did the off the work stuff, off the field stuff. It was always, oh, you know, I got away with this in college and high school of just going out and playing. In the NFL, you can't do that. The true cream of the crop rises when you go to the NFL, and he just wasn't good, just not good at all.
Yeah, Baker Mayfield was studying day one, and it's crazy because I remember when we drafted Baker. That's not necessarily what I wanted. Like, I forget what I want. I think I wanted Saquon. That's who I wanted for them to pick number one. How everything worked out, I would much rather have it this way. And I even think even the night we drafted Baker, I went, I don't really like it. I mean, I don't hate it, but I'm just not, like, excited for it. But I also wanted them to draft Johnny Manziel, and I got my wish, and that turned out to be garbage. So what the fuck do I know?
I remember, so I was working for the Plain Dealer at Cleveland.com, and I was at the Browns facility on draft night 2014, and we were doing like a live show, and like when the Browns made a pick, because they had two picks, when the Browns made a pick, we would go on and talk and come on, you know, live video stream for the show. So in between, I was actually sitting in the Browns locker room with the equipment manager, Brad Mellon, who is a friend with Jerry, and I met him through Jerry. So I was sitting with Brad and his son in the Browns locker room. And then I was getting tipped off about the NFL picks. So it was like a pick before the Browns. Manziel was there, and I get a text that the Browns were taking Manziel. And I told, you know, the equipment manager for the Browns, Brad, I'm like, oh my God, Browns are taking Manziel. He goes, no, they're not. No, Browns aren't taking Manziel. I show him my phone. He goes, oh my God. And he goes, we got to get to work. So then, you know, Manziel's picked, and, you know, Manziel was there the next day. It was just crazy, crazy time. I mean, the bosses that I work for, the Plain Dealer, they didn't care about Manziel, the player. They just knew if you put Johnny Manziel name in the headline or, you know, SEO, social media, search engine optimization, a ton of clicks, and we got a ton of traffic. You know, from Johnny Manziel articles, we try to, you know, if someone got murdered in Lakewood, we try to put Johnny Manziel in the headline because we know that people are going to search Johnny Manziel's name and the story is going to pop up. But, I mean, he added, you know, all the eyes to Cleveland. It's just that it didn't pan out, but he did bring some attention. You know, he made a lot of money off jersey sales, right?
Yeah, I bought one.
Of course you did.
I bought two. I've bought, well, prior to buying my personalized one, I bought two. One was Josh Cribbs. That is currently sitting behind me, hanging up, autographed twice. And then the Manziel jersey, I had my own name put over that one. Even though I, at that point, I had already bought the high-end version of the personalized jersey. So now I wear mine and my girlfriend wears the former Mansell jersey, because that thing just literally sat in a drawer after he got drafted. I have a personal rule. I will not wear a jersey of a player who no longer plays on the team. If they're a Hall of Fame player or something, like, that's different. Or if they're retired, that's different. But as soon as Mansell, like, we got rid of him, I'm like, yeah, I'm not wearing that ever again. I don't care. So that had to get replaced, sadly. Oddly enough, too, the night of the draft, I can tell you exactly where I was. Mm. I was, this was the address, 5660 Universal Drive, Memphis, Tennessee.
What?
I was in one of a drop yard that we used to use for the one company I was a part of. And I was grabbing a trailer and I was about to head to, I can't remember where I want to say, maybe might have been Nebraska. Had to go to a Walmart hub, but I was getting ready to leave, listening to XM radio, and they were like, you know, the Browns have just traded up. And I'm like, no, are we getting them? Is this going to be him? And then they announce it, and I freaked the fuck out because I was so excited. I was, like, pumped for the rest of my drive that night, driving as far, wherever I freaking drove to. But, yeah,
it was crazy. It was like the Beatles came to town. I mean, I had to go the next day to Brown's facility to cover his introductory press conference. And, like, you know, the people were waiting outside, and he pulled up and he got out of the car and waved to everybody. It felt like the Beatles were in town when Menzel hit, and everybody in media, who's who of media came to Cleveland to cover that press conference. The press room was completely packed, standing room only. But like I said, didn't pan out.
Yeah, but the going back to where we are now with the Browns, it's just, like I said, I've never been this hyped for a season in a while. Like you even said, too, like, we're not really looking at a draft. Like, obviously, I want us to have a good draft. We've had a
short, oh, yeah.
I think we've had, like, two really good drafts in a row, maybe three, definitely two. And I'm really excited to see where we go from here. And this, even if they trade out, if they trade out of the first round, I'll be kind of upset because my other team is the Bears and they don't even have a pick in the first round. So I'm only watching the first round for that Browns pick. And it's right in the fucking middle.
Like I said, it's just nice to be able to sit here in middle of February and not have endless discussion about, oh, should the Browns take a quarterback? What are the Browns going to do with the second pick overall or the first pick overall? It's nice to just breathe and just not be able to focus on the biggest day in Browns, you know, for the Browns of the year, which is the draft. It's just, it's very nice. It's different. I can get used to this.
Hopefully I want to go to the playoffs next year. I think that's like kind of my hopes at.
You went over the North. I mean, it's a possibility. It's definitely not out of the realm of, of it could happen. So, I mean, you laid it out earlier with what the AFC North looking like. I mean, there's no reason why the Browns shouldn't be a contender for the AFC North to get in, not just, you know, wild card, but to be a division champion to get into the playoffs. I think they should be a contender, if not the contender, when it comes down to, August, September.
Actually, I take that back. I don't want them to go to the playoffs. I mean, I do. That's not top of my list. The top of my list is I want to beat Pittsburgh decisively in Pittsburgh.
Mm.
I want all their stars playing. I don't want this. Well, Ben Roethlisberger was injured, so it didn't. No, I want Baker Mayfield to go into Heinz Field and be the first Browns quarterback to win there.
Mm.
That's probably number one on the list. And the crazy thing is, you know, Baker Mayfield has the same mindset right now. Like, oh yeah, I want to go in there and I want to rep this city and I want to bring us home the first fucking win. He's already breaking records. So let's get after how long that fucking stadium's been there. Let's get the first win. I think the closest one we had was what, 2007 when we lost by a field goal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Almost won that one, but yeah, that's all I kind of want. If we could sweep Pittsburgh, that's an added bonus.
Oh my god, that would be great, and make the playoffs. Ooh, that'd be great.
All right, let's start to wrap this show up, and let's get into the Fave Five questions.
Ooh.
Hey, this is Booker T, 5-time champ, and this is the Fave Five questions. Now, can you dig it?
All right, and start with this question. is Chicago deep dish considered pizza?
Yes.
Okay. How do you feel about it versus New York? You're a little bit more traveled than most.
I just love this. I just love the thickness. I just love it, just the layers upon layers. If you can give me a pizza that I had to eat with a fork, that's a good pizza.
Dude, same. Like, there's people like, you have to eat it with a fork or it's like lasagna. And I'm like, what's wrong with lasagna? I love lasagna. You're just adding a little bit more like dough. Like, hell yeah, let's do it up. I love deep dish.
I'm a huge crust guy. Like, I love a good crust. Like, I have to have a thick crust. And I love stuffed crust, but Pizza Hut has really dropped the ball on stuffed crust pizza for the last decade. It's just not enough cheese, not enough dough. Pizza Hut has gone down the tubes. Pizza Hut used to be one of my favorites. Now, not anymore. But I get it because I love stuffed crust pizza. But, like, I love dough. So when you get out of Chicago, you have all that crust. It's just – it's like dessert when you get to the end of the slice.
I think it depends. I love me some stuffed crust, but when it comes to crust in general, there always is a handful that I'm just like, yeah, I could do without this pizza place's crust, but there's like other places I'm like, oh no, like theirs is good no matter what. Like, I'm not a big fan of Domino's. It's been a very long time since I've had their pizza. I've always liked, you know, Papa John's, Hungry Howie's, Pizza Hut's okay too. I think I just had one recently where I gave most of my crust to the dog, but it just depends.
If you get Domino's, you have to get the pan pizza. You can't get the regular pizza, like the hand toss, whatever. The hand toss sucks. Like, they suck too. But if you get a pan pizza, even from Papa John's, Papa John's pan pizza is excellent. Yeah. All right? It's good. I will vouch for Papa John's pan pizza. Only the pan. Pan pizza from Domino's, too, is really good. But Papa John's pan pizza, this came out with it like a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. Oh, my God, dude. If you haven't tried it, try it.
I think I've been more on a lot of the pizza places' wings lately. And I just had Pizza Hut's the other night. It's the thing that I liked about them, they were bigger. Much bigger than most places. So that was a thumbs up for them. I used to love Domino's wings when they only had one type of barbecue. But now they have like a bunch of different sauces and it's just not the same. And I think Papa John's is okay.
Papa John's wings are amazing.
Yeah.
Domino's are eh. Pizza Hut, I think they're awful. I never had a good order of wings from Pizza Hut. Never. Papa John's, oh my God, dude. Like, I don't know if it's because of the Lakewood location that I usually get Papa John's from. Dude. Hella good. That place deserves 5 stars for their pizza pan, Papa John's pan pizza, and their wings. I'm a drumstick guy, and all their drumsticks are like just huge. Like, it's amazing. This is not a paid endorsement from Papa John's in Lakewood. This is just me personally liking Papa John's pizza, pan pizza, and wings.
This is a good transition for question number two. Wings, bone in or out?
Oh, okay. If you're going to give me all drumsticks, bone in. If it's going to be more flats, which usually how the case is more flats than drumsticks, I'm just going to get boneless.
Really? You're actually the first person to even give any type of battle for boneless. Because
really?
Yeah.
What's wrong with boneless? Boneless, you just pop it in your, I mean, I know it's like a chicken nugget, but I mean, heck, dude, if you go to the right place, you can get some big ass pieces of boneless to chow down on. There's nothing wrong with going to Applebee's and getting an order of what, $5 appetizer for boneless wings, getting some honey barbecue on that. What's wrong with that? People hating on boneless. It's more like it's just, if you're just having a good time, you don't want to get your hands messy and you want to enjoy some chicken. Why are people hating on boneless?
I think it's because they're more like a chicken nugget or even her chicken tenders. I kind of tend to agree with it. Like, I prefer bone in. I actually like flats over drumsticks because I could put those things in my mouth, take my teeth and just rip the meat off. Oh, like I could slam down wings that way.
They're a nuisance. They got two bones in those. You got cartridge on each side. You got to worry about that. Like, I get it. You could just pop them in and suck them off. I mean, I get it. But Jesus, it just seems sometimes it just seems to be a nuisance more than a convenience. And the drumsticks, I mean, I can put down a lot of drumsticks. You give me drumsticks, I'll eat everything off that one little bone. But boneless, if you're having a nice night, with your girl and you want some chicken, you know, just whatever. You don't want to make a mess or get your fingers all messy. I mean, what's wrong with boneless? It's just a boneless is just like the rich people version of the bone-in wing.
What if it says the rich version of the chicken nuggets?
That too, yes. But I feel like you could say, I'm going to have some wings, all right? And you can go and have some boneless wings and say, hey, I had some wings.
All I know is Nick Gage said boneless wings are just chicken nuggets, so I tend to...
Well, I'll fight Nick Gage over that.
Good luck.
Don't say that. Don't put this out there publicly. It's between me and you. I don't want Nick Gage cutting me down or challenging me to a match because I'll get my butt kicked. But when it comes to wings, Nick Gage, can we swear?
Yeah.
Fuck you, Nick Gage.
Here's actually a new question. This will be question number 3. And I tend to use this a lot more. It's been a discussion among friends for a while. Rank the fast food chicken nuggets between McDonald's, Burger King, and Wendy's. So rank them from 1 to 3, 3 to 1, whatever you want to do it.
McDonald's number 1.
Okay.
Wendy's number 2, Burger King number 3.
This question, it's kind of a trap because I want someone to give me a reason why Burger King should be 1 or 2, because I'm much like you. That's my list. But there are people that like Wendy's over McDonald's. That's fine. Whatever you choose. Mm-hmm. But it's that Burger King one because they're so – it's in between them being so bad and just the other two being so good.
Yeah, it's more of that. I mean, I could tolerate getting some, you know, some nuggets from Burger King because they're so cheap. You get like, what, for eight for a buck or something, I guess?
Yeah.
But McDonald's, just that breading. It's just – it's that recipe. I don't know what it is. The breading is really good. It's just the way it's cooked. I mean, I don't know. It's just – and Wendy's is good. Wendy's – I'm a big honey mustard guy. So when I dip my Wendy's into the honey mustard, I think it changes the game a little bit for how I view Wendy's nuggets, but Burger King is just trash. Like I don't get it. I don't get why Burger King. I think Burger King fries are the best out of all those. I love Burger King fries. I will always like Burger King fries, but when it comes to nuggets, not a fan.
Yeah, the thing that holds me back from Wendy's is actually I found this out recently. One of my favorite dipping sauces, and I don't do it all the time, but for nuggets is honey. There's
Oh my god. You and I are like McDonald's chicken nuggets. If I get a dipping sauce, it's honey, just straight
honey. I don't get it all the time. Sometimes I'm more sweet and sour. Sometimes it is honey mustard. But I was having a conversation with my girlfriend about it. And I'm just like, yeah, you never got honey with chicken nuggets, really? The next time we went to go get nuggets was Wendy's. And they asked me like what I want. I was like, honey, because I know they used to sell it. And I'm now saying used to. Because she looked at me like, what? You mean honey mustard? I'm like, no, honey. Like, the dipping sauce? Honey? Just honey? No, we don't have those. I'm like, what?
Oh, my God.
You guys got rid? Granted, I'm like, she probably wasn't even around. Like, whenever they got rid of it, I have no idea when. But what the fuck, Wendy's? And I think what it could be, I don't know the price of honey and everything. McDonald's, their dipping cup for honey was very small.
Oh, it's shallow. You have to get... You know, 10 of those bad boys to even get your fill, or even having a nice coating on each nugget you eat from McDonald's for your honey. But dude, honey mustard. That's my two dipping sauces for McDonald's nuggets. And like I wanted to order McDonald's via Uber Eats when I was like traveling, and I wanted to get chicken nuggets. And I'm like, oh, they're probably not going to have an option for honey. They have all the options for everything else. You know, when you click, you tap what sauce you want, and they had it for honey. So somebody in corporate enjoys honey with their chicken nuggets. I'm just glad that they have the option because, and you like it too. Mm-hmm. Honey chicken nuggets is a game changer. It's like dipping your fries into a Frosty. It's just that hack that everybody should enjoy.
Question number 4. This is another newer question. It's actually the only wrestling related question that I have. And I think it's very polarizing. If you had to pick between these two genres of wrestling, which would you pick? Deathmatch or comedy?
Oh my God.
They are such polar opposites, and I think they're two of the most polarizing.
Yeah, because it's two of the most disliked portions of wrestling that I you know, for me personally, I don't really like either one. So if I had to pick one, I mean, like, what kind of comedy are we talking? Are we talking like Joey Ryan comedy or like Grado comedy?
They're both comedy.
Oh my God.
Cole Cabana, comedy. Yeah, Space Monkey, like, comedy. Dick Justice, comedy.
But there's a difference between, like, you know, a Grado comedy match and then someone grabbing someone's penis and acting like it's like a force. Like, that's just stupid. Like, I'll never be a fan of Joey Ryan. I'm sorry. I just can't get on that train of someone grabbing a penis. You know, they wanted Jerry Lawler to do that spot at WrestleCon a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
When Jerry faced off against Andy Kaufman version of Joey Ryan, the initial plan was Jerry to grab Joey Ryan's penis and sell it. And Jerry was like, nope, not doing it. Nope, not doing that. Oh my God. Back to your question. I'm sorry.
Gotta pick one.
I would just do comedy and hope for the best.
Okay. I kind of thought you'd go more toward deathmatch, because I know you don't like comedy, or you just think like deathmatch is just too fucking crazy.
Deathmatch is, I'm not skirmish of blood or anything of that nature. I just think it's why do that? Like, why? What's the point of fluorescent light bulbs being laid down and you're jumping through? Like, kudos for you to do it. I can never do that. Obviously you have more balls than I do if you're going to do that. I just don't find it entertaining enough to sit there and watch it. You know, for a whole show, I just couldn't do it. A comedy, you know, I know there's some good comedy. I know there's some bad comedy. I think I could tolerate even the bad comedy because I can laugh at them, not with them.
I mean, you witnessed some deathmatch at AIW.
Yeah, but not. I mean, when I think deathmatch, I'm thinking like Joey and Janela climbing the rafters, falling through 8 fluorescent tubes onto a shopping cart. Like, that's what I think when I think of deathmatch, or like, you know, outdoor wrestling. To where, like, Eric Ryan does, to where he gets, you know, all cut up and there's blood everywhere and there's this guy's bleeding profusely everywhere. When I think deathmatch, I think of that. If it's like AIW kind of deathmatch, I mean, I could deal with that.
I mean, technically, I've seen Eric Ryan pretty much almost bleed to death in a non-deathmatch. It's just he got cut the wrong way and he's freaking bleeding like a stuffed pig. I think that was Hell on Earth. I don't remember the year, but I think the DVD cover is him just with the Crimson Mask just everywhere.
Eric Ryan is one tough son of a gun.
All right, question number 5. We're on the polarizing thing. We're going to go into the Wilkman question from Kick Out of 2. Is Die Hard a Christmas movie?
Of course, yes.
Yeah.
What do you say?
I'm not in the camp. Like, I don't care. Like, if people do watch it, I've always said that, hey, if you watch it at Christmas and you love it and to you that's a Christmas movie, that's fine, but in my household, that's not what we do, and I'm fine with that.
I mean, it's not on my Christmas list of movies that I have to watch around the holidays, but if it's on, like, I mean, I can see why it's going to be on around Christmas because of, you know, setting is Christmas. I mean, I can see why it being a Christmas movie. I mean, it doesn't have to be all, you know, bells of holly and fa-la-la-la-la. I mean, it is set on Christmas.
I've often said that in that case, Rocky IV is a Christmas movie. Which, I mean, hey, it falls under the same thing, and people consider it one, just like, Lethal Weapon is a Christmas movie, Batman Returns is a Christmas movie.
Okay, so people can watch it on Christmas.
Yeah. What is your favorite Christmas movie?
A Christmas Story.
Yeah, that's mighty Cleveland of you. One of my favorites.
If you had a non... mighty Cleveland. A Christmas Story movie... you gotta go with the Home Alones. I mean, Home Alone is a great Christmas movie.
Very, very popular. Which one do you like more, 1 or 2?
Two. Actually, I enjoy 2 okay. more.
I'm in the camp 2, but mainly because I loved the Talkboy tape recorder, and I often say that's part of the reason why I do this now. Because I used to basically create podcasts.
All I wanted was that for Christmas. All I wanted was a Talkboy. I never got it.
Really? I had like 2.
Well, good for you. I never got one. I always told my parents I wanted a Talkboy, and I never got one. I should just get one now, just because I can.
You have a Zoom H6. Like,
yeah, but Macaulay Culkin never had one.
He might have one now. I don't know, with all the movie stuff he's doing now. I don't know. That's true. He could carry one with him.
Macaulay Culkin's a weird dude. Not weird in a bad way, in a good way. I hung out with him at StarCast. He was there. Real nice guy. Real small. Real tiny dude. But he's a good guy. He's a little bit out there. But I guess if you hang out with Michael Jackson long enough, that turns you weird.
All right. The final question, and normally question number six is just a random question. Uh-huh. And I'll go with, from your experience in AIW, outside of what we have already talked about, what was your favorite AIW memory? Because the Ronda Rousey one is like definitely top, so that's why it's like you need to think of it.
Yeah,
one.
Yeah. You want to know my favorite AIW memory? This is, you know, I did some commentary for some matches of people who are like in WWE, and you know, I don't really know what people thought of my commentary. I know some people listen; they enjoyed it. You know, there's some people there, like I said, in Raw and SmackDown that I did commentary. That's pretty cool. But I think for me was, you know, I always got to Mount Carmel really, really early, like before even the guys set the ring up. I'm just a guy that likes to get there early, the setup, you know, the recording equipment, and just kind of feel it out the place. I mean, it was for sports. When I played sports, I always got there a couple hours earlier than anybody else. So I think it was my favorite moment was, like, I feel like you can't, like, if you're not a wrestler, you can't touch the ring. Like, you can't get in the ring. If you're not part of the show, you shouldn't be able to go in the ring. So then that's just like my rule. So for myself is like, if you're not a wrestler or part of the show, you shouldn't be in the ring. So I got there really early. The truck came for to set the ring up. And I asked John, like, can I help set the ring up? And he goes, no one has ever asked that. Sure. You can help. You can help, you know, Dr. Dan and Frankie Flynn and all the, you know, the guys that were just in the school, you know, for setting the ring up. And I set the ring up. And I thought that was the coolest thing in the world, was to set up a wrestling ring and to, like, see all the pieces of the wrestling ring and to put it together, to help put it together, the ring posts, the canvas. I just thought that was the coolest thing. So I would say my favorite memory was being able to say that I helped set up a wrestling ring.
That's a pretty good one.
I know it's not, like, flashy, like Rousey or anything, but, I mean, that's – that was pretty cool to me.
I mean, it could definitely obviously be anything, because obviously you also did the podcast for a while, but there's also just, I don't know, like, you could even just be something with Biggins. Like, even, like, me looking back at some of my favorite moments, like, were, you know, something about Biggins. Like, one in particular was when I won the date with Veda Scott. Like, the look on his face when I handed him the money was priceless. Like, he was so excited, and there's a picture of him holding all the money up and just grinning from ear to ear, like, teeth out and everything. Just, that's, like, one of those moments that I absolutely love, and he was always such a great guy, so.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I think it was just being able to set the ring up, that a wrestling ring that, you know, I watched wrestling since I was a kid and, you know, never touched there, been in a ring. I mean, I've been in the ring once, and that was when Gargano, his last show, and everybody was ringside and we got to go in the ring and, you know, give him a hug or whatever. That's the only time I've ever been, I think, in the ring. I think I've been into a ring at a Memphis Hustle game when Jerry did an appearance, but it was like a small, like, there was not even a ring apron. It was just like a small 10-foot by 10-foot, just mock ring. So to actually go into an actual wrestling ring, you know, and set it up, I think that was really cool. Just, you know, for me. But I mean, calling some matches, you know, like a EC3 match, I called the Johnny Gargano match, which is, you know, pretty freaking cool to say. Did a whole show, the What's in the Basement show. I did that, you know, the full show with Wadsworth. I mean,
I think I remember that one.
Yeah. So I mean, that was pretty cool to do and be able to watch back these matches and hear your commentary over them. But I mean, setting up the ring, it was pretty cool.
All right. Any final thoughts or last minute plugs before we go?
Of course, you can hear me with Jerry the King Lawler every week on Dinner with the King. It's a wrestling podcast, but it's just more like two guys just shooting the shit, talking wrestling, talking about Jerry's career and whatever's going on in the world of wrestling for that week. You know, him and I have been friends for like 10 years. So it's like I said, it's like two friends just sitting at dinner, talking and catching up for the week. You can follow me on Twitter at GlenmoreCLE, Instagram GmoreCLE. You can just search Glenmore. You can find my website. And that's pretty much it for the plugs. Final word? Oh, geez, I asked Jerry this every episode. Final, what's the final word is for him? Final thought? You know, just for you and, you know, I know how hard it is to start a podcast. I've been podcasting for almost 11 years. And to get to episode 100, however the road is or was for you to get here at episode 100, it's please take it as an accomplishment because, you know, podcasts start and they die, you know, quickly. People get bored. People just don't have the drive to do a podcast because they don't want to, you know, they see the numbers of downloads and it's not to their liking. And they think it's going to take off overnight. But, dude, it's, you know, I really appreciate you asking me for episode 100. But kudos to you and all the people that you do the podcast with. They keep it going to episode 100. And, you know, I really hope you do 100 more. And hopefully I can be in episode 200, buddy.
That one might be John Thorne.
Okay. I'll give John Thorne 200. How about 199?
We'll see. We'll see. It's going to depend on the next 2+ years. Well, I might do under 2 years because I like doing bonus episodes because I think that's one of the big things when it comes to podcasting is there's so many people who don't know how to be consistent, or like it's kind of like you said, they give up because they think, oh, they're gonna become this, you know, big podcast and everything. And I think that's the mindset of a lot of people, you know, I've come across, and I'm like, I do this as a hobby. I know I spend way more money than I've ever received back, and the only thing that I've gained from, you know, doing these podcasts is respect from people. And I have a little bit of, you know, kind of credential of people trust me, people respect me. I mean, is it everybody? No, but when I reach out for an interview, I'm pretty confident that I have enough people to say like, no, he's a good dude. He's been, you know, he's a good interview. He's not going to hand you the same shit as everybody else. So trust me, I take it as a huge compliment. And the fact that I really strive not to sound like everybody else. Mm-hmm. I try to put my best foot forward, and I've been looking to improve ever since day one.
Well, you definitely are improving, and you're not an intern anymore.
Well, you said I'll always be the intern for.
Well, if TIWS was around still, you'd be a full time employee.
Would someone else have to get Chipotle but me?
Yes, that would be Frankie Flynn. He would have to get Chipotle for us.
All right. You can find myself at Heavyset330 on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, just much like you can find this show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, Facebook.com/WrestlingCheers, Twitter.com/WrestlingCheers, and Instagram.com/WrestlingCheers. Email, if you so choose a desire, WrestlingCheers@gmail.com. Still have the merch store over at WhatAManeuver.net. One more time, please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you're listening to this show. Whether it be Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, YouTube, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or Podbean, WrestlingCheers.podbean.com. Check out our friends on the Trending Topics Network, such as All Beer Inside, Eurovision Showcase, Old School at the Movies, and Wrestling with Altitude. Check out our other podcast friends, such as Pod Van Dam, Super Fantastic Podcast, The Road Home from Wrestling, Kick Out of Two, The IndieCast, So Bros Network, Big Gold Belt Podcast, Spotlight Series, and I Got Your 5 Stars. And check out our other non-podcasting friends, such as Thrift Store Jobber, The Stavish Stash, Set Tab Photo, Powerslam.tv. Use the promo code WrestlingCheers, all one word. Get your first month free. Ringside Shots Photography, Sickening Pictures, Wrestle Void, Keon Sports, Stay Tough, Midwest Territory, and the official graphic designer of Wrestling Cheers, Moy Boy Designs. That will do it for us here on Wrestling Cheers, where everybody knows your name, especially when you have dinner with the king. Later. Making your way in the world today takes everything you got. Taking a break from all your worries sure would help a lot. Would you like to get away? Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name. Rules are all the same. You're a fool, everybody knows you're.
Yeah.